Hello, and welcome or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, episode 12. I'm Adam Five, and today I've been thinking about the long-lasting, not longevity of life, but the longevity of the evidence of life, specifically the longevity of the evidence of our lives. One of the things I often realize as I'm doing these random rambling recordings is the fact that I'm not really coming up with anything brand new. I'm not coming up with original thoughts, because it's all been thought before, it's all been speculated on before and written about. My failing has been, and continues to be, the fact that I don't know who wrote about it, or when. And so, when I go on like this, I'm not congratulating myself under my breath for being so clever. If anything, I get a little bit depressed over how clumsily I get some of the ideas across, if at all. But I'm going to try anyway. Why? Why not? So who wrote about this first? Why is it that reincarnation, the concept of reincarnation, isn't a part of most major popular Western versions of Christianity? How is it that that particular aspect or possibility of continued existence after death, how is it that that one got swept under the refrigerator, torn out of the book, redacted? Because it seems to me that if you could really get people to believe, I mean, you get enough people to believe in something. Over the centuries, the various churches have certainly gotten enough people to believe enough to build massive cathedrals, pour lots of money into churches, and while I don't have any particular problem with that, I am curious. What about reincarnation? If from the very start you could get people to believe thoroughly in that and go even a step further, this is my non-original idea. I don't know who came up with it first or how many or when, but suppose it was one of the basic foundations of your belief or your faith that not only are you reincarnated, but that you have to live every other life. If you've got faith enough to believe in the eternity of the soul, well, this podcast has already gone into dabbling with the infinite. And if you've got an eternity to play with, then it becomes more and more plausible. Suppose you had to live every life there ever was. Everyone you've met up with, heard about, read about, everyone that's alive today, everyone that ever died, and everyone that ever will be born, you will have to live those lives as well. Certainly something worth thinking about. If everybody believed that, say for the past 2,000 years, or even 1,500 years, say it took about 500 years for the idea to really catch on and take hold and become a really core portion of everybody's belief, I wonder what kind of world it would be. Would it be any better? I mean, would you treat some person or some group of people in a bad way for whatever reason, whatever your justifications are? It gives new meaning to the golden rule. Treat others as you would like to be treated. How easy would it be to pick up a gun and go after somebody? How easy would it be to have a war? How easy would it be to pick up a gun, have a war, overcharge somebody, spend $1 billion on things that kill people and about 4 cents on education? How easy would that be if you knew that you were going to have to be everybody else? Whatever you do to somebody else is going to be done to you at some point. I don't know. I don't know if it would be a better world. I guess it would depend, of course, entirely on how much and how much it's, how deeply it's believed and how many people actually acted on it. And we've already got a slew of religions whose basic tenet is, be nice to other people. Well, things could always be worse. But that's not today's subject. Today's subject is how long evidence of us lasts. I changed the header on the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space webpage to show something that relates directly to the next thought. And if you've been to it already, you'll know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And you can ask this question too at your next party if you don't particularly feel like being listened to or popular. Or the next time the party's over and it's just a core group of friends hanging around, finishing the bottle of wine, lighting a candle, and just sitting down waiting to fall asleep, where you discuss those deep and interesting things. At least that's what I used to do when I was in college. It's June 1st, 2006, and to the best of my knowledge, there is only one work of art, and here you can split hairs over whether it's a work of art or not, but there's only one work of art that's going to last as close to forever as a human being can imagine. One artist has work created, and it's a single work of art created, that's going to last longer than the Earth and the Sun. It's not Da Vinci, it's not Rembrandt, it's not Van Gogh, it's not Ansel Adams. It's Linda Sagan. Because from what I've been able to read, Linda Sagan is a woman who got together and created the graphic for that gold anodized aluminum plate that was screwed, or two of them I think there were, screwed to the main structure of the Pioneer satellites, 10 and 11, the ones that left in the 70s. The first human-made object to leave the solar system. And it's out there so far now that I think the last thing I read was that it would take 25 years for light from one of those satellites to reach Earth. And they're traveling further and further out, faster and faster, and just, they're gone. One of the sentences that struck me in one of the paragraphs that I read when I was looking into this was that NASA, according to NASA, those satellites will last longer than our sun and the Earth. I guess simply because they're not going to be around if anything particularly bad happens. If either the sun goes nova or just shrinks down into a dwarf star. And certainly when that happens, whatever happens to be left around on Earth, from the Mona Lisa to any photograph you ever happen to see by Ansel Adams, digitized or not, now that's as of today, that's as of now, all going to be gone, all going to be wiped away, completely destroyed, except for that one plaque that's got that drawing of the man and the woman on it, standing in front of the silhouette of the spacecraft that it's attached to. So you can ask that as a trick question. What artist has produced a single work of art that's going to last longer than anything else? And as I'm saying that, I'm thinking also of that vocal recording, Voices of Earth. There was some kind of a disc, an audio disc. I'm guessing it was done like a record album. I'm not sure it was done like a laser disc or anything like that. I could be wrong. I should look into that. But that, I believe, has samples of music on it. Maybe a couple of concertos. So there's some artists that have stuff out there that won't get destroyed because that satellite went out also, I believe. And so far as anybody can figure, all it's going to do is exist. Because also, according to NASA, it would take longer for the Pioneer satellites to get to the next star, even at the speed they're traveling. It would take longer for those satellites to get to the next star than the amount of time that the Milky Way galaxy has existed. So compared to most everything else, they're traveling like at a less than a snail's pace on a galactic scale. But there exists at least some proof that human beings existed once. And it's kind of sad that that's it, because no matter what kind of monument or structure you want to make, whether it's the pyramids or not, in the really long term, and I know you figured out by now that on this podcast we like to think about the really long term, in the really long term it just isn't going to be around anymore, stone or not. So what I've been thinking about is the longevity of human evidence. And it seems so far that as far as the modern world goes, there isn't nearly enough stuff that's going to last any appreciable amount of time. Oh, but no, wait, Adam. You're wrong. What about all the radio waves and television waves we've been pumping out for decades and decades? That's all proof we exist. I'm talking about stuff you can actually put your hands on. Or if you're an alien and you run across it in your little scooter, what you can put your tentacles on, or your pods, or whatever happens to turn up. You know, a physical, concrete item. Might even be concrete. Though it'll probably be better to be granite. And that is what's going to be this question. The podcast for this question is, and I'm going to put it in very solid terms, picture, if you will, a 10-foot by 10-foot by 2-foot thick block of granite. 10 by 10 by 2. Why? I don't know. Why not? You could make it 12 by 12, but I like 10 by 10. And it's going to serve as the tabula rasa. It's going to be your blank, not slate, but granite, your blank granite to carve into on both sides, if you like, whatever you would like to indicate to an alien intelligence 3,000, 10,000, 20,000 years from now when it is found, because we're going to assume that it is found, floating out in the depths of space. Because we know we don't want to put it anywhere on Earth, just in case the Earth happens to plummet into the sun however many millions of years from now. So it's going to be sent out into space. Wild speculation, that's what this show's about. Imagine enough time, money, and energy was spent into getting that kind of payload, a 10 by 10 by 2-foot thick block of granite, not only off the Earth and out of orbit, but out of the solar system. Traveling fast enough so that if our sun did explode, the energy would just wash over it as an inconvenience. That's how far out it would be. We'll send it hurtling off towards some star system that it would never reach. But it's out there. It's safe. It's not going to hit asteroids. It's not going to hit a comet. Chances are, actually, you send something out in any direction, the chances are extremely low that it's going to hit anything. So what would you put on it? You got 100 square feet on either side of it. Sounds like a lot, but not really. 10 foot by 10 foot to carve anything you want into a block of granite to indicate who we were, what we knew, how we behaved, what we believed, the worst things we ever did, the best things we ever did. And I'm going to throw another little spin on the ball, or the block. I say we put compartments in the thing, too. If you've got a 2-foot thick piece of granite that you could cut into on the edges, on the outer rim, on the outside, let's say you put 3 compartments on each side. 3 cavities spaced evenly apart, maybe 2 or 3 feet in. You hollow those out so that you got maybe a 1-foot square inside that you can put something into, and then slip that piece of stone that caps it back in, seal it up nice and solid with the most dense and long-lasting kind of mortar you could apply to granite so that it essentially is hermetically sealed. You could put the thing, say, at the bottom of the ocean, and a million years could go by, nothing would happen to it. Out in space, forget about it. Nothing's going to happen to it. Even wind erosion on Earth with particles of dust and sand take thousands and thousands of years to wear away at granite. out in space, all you've got are cosmic rays. And there's plenty of dust out there and plenty of particles and there's solar wind, but in the vacuum of space, in the void of space, it would last every bit as long as that gold anodized plate on the Pioneer satellites. So you've got three compartments, 1 foot square on each edge, 12 altogether. It just gets more and more difficult, or more and more interesting, depending on how long you want to think about it, and if you think it would be worth it. Proof that we were here, 12 items of some kind to indicate what we had or what we knew, what would you write, or rather carve deeply into either side, and what would you put in those compartments? Well, it's a shopping day, so I'll be continuing this in the car. But in the meantime, please give a listen to these two podcast promos. One of them's going to be on the long side, but I had a lot of fun doing it, so I'm going to play it anyway. It's for Gamer the Podcasting. The other, I'm not sure. I haven't picked it out yet, but here's two promos, and I'll be back in a bit.
Anim 5, license number 24601. The Case of the Monkey's Harp, May 28th, 2:30 a.m. My meeting with Louisa Draper turned up a big fat zero. I was 6 days into the case and no closer to finding an answer than I was to getting a date with Hedy Lamarr. I left the automat and cut through Lonnie's alley on my way back to the waterfront. I never saw the goon that slipped out of the shadows behind me. I heard one footstep, but before I could say filigatusha, he'd laid a blackjack across the back of my favorite head and it was lights out. When I came to, I was strapped in a chair, surrounded by third-rate torpedoes and staring into the ugly face of an old friend.
Ah, I think at last, Anim 5. Perhaps then you are ready to talk? Eh? You have information for us? Why don't you save us all some trouble and talk, yeah?
Sure, I'll talk. But could you tell this little creepier to stop smacking his hand and grunting? What is that, a mental condition? Is he swatting flies or something?
That's not a very nice thing to say. I wouldn't hurt a fly.
Why not?
Because flies deserve to live.
Leave us, Doctor. I'll deal with him.
I don't know. 6 years at Heidelberg to deal with such nonsense. Who do these people think they are?
I don't think we're going to get anything out of him, boss.
Nonsense. We shall have some answers.
Anim 5, we know you listen to Game of the Podcasting, admit it.
Game of the Podcasting?
Yeah.
The podcast that deals with all aspects of RPG gaming, specializing in live-action role-playing, where Caroline, Jeff, and Sasha give new tips, tricks, and insights to their listeners every episode?
Exactly.
Never heard of it.
Foolish pig. You cannot hide the truth from us.
Look, buddy, I went to high school with you. You were born in Irvington, New Jersey. What are you talking like that for?
That's rich. He sure got the right dope. Nobody can make him out so he can get away with it. No, sir. Silence, swine.
Swine. Listen to him, swine.
We searched your pockets, idiot. Once we found this, read what is on this paper.
It says, show notes.
Schnotz. It says schnotz. You will pronounce it properly.
Maybe you better go and play with your hand-smacking buddy out there.
No tricks from you, Anim 5. Roll up his sleeve. Aha. Just as I thought. An arm.
All right, you want the truth? I can give it to you. But the answers come out of a word game you're too stupid to play.
I can solve any puzzle you put before me, Mr. Chewing Gum on Your Shoes.
All right, genius. Finish this sentence. You can bet on a horse to win, place, or...
show.
Not bad, handsome. Okay, here's a tougher one. Little Johnny couldn't get the tune right because he was playing the wrong
notes.
Give that man a cigar. Now, you're a sharp cookie. You put it together.
Show notes. Show no... You swine!
There he goes with the swine again. Do you know what we do to podcast listeners who don't cooperate?
No. So, you won't even tell us that?
Group leader, a large black car has pulled up outside. The Mad Three are entering the building.
Holy smoke! Out! Everyone out!
Leave us!
We surrender. Don't shoot. I have a cold.
Gamer the Podcasting. It's not fantasy. It's frozen reality concentrate.
Well, back to our subject matter, which is things that will outlast the Earth and our sun. Basically, something sent hurtling out into space beyond the solar system. I seem to be reviewing for myself and repeating stuff that I already talked about. So I'll stop that. I've had a little bit of time to think about it. Too much stuff going on at work to give it my full attention, and I apologize in advance for the heavy background noise of air conditioning, but it is just too hot today. So we've got 12 openings. We've got 12 compartments. Let's say they're 1 foot cubed. They're 1 cubic foot. And we can select not necessarily just 12 items, 12 objects, but we can select as much as we can fit into a cubic foot. And I'm wondering what would survive an absolute zero. I wonder what kind of material would not disintegrate as soon as you touch it if it spent a million years sealed in a granite block in outer space. In other words, I don't think you could put a book in that compartment, just a regular paperback or hardcover. I don't think you could just put a regular book, even if it's in that sealed granite container, because I'm pretty sure it would just, if it didn't rot completely away into some kind of a dust, then it would probably be in a form that would crumble to dust the instant you touched it, by the time our alien friends, now that's what we're going to assume, of course, we're going to have to assume that some intelligent beings find the thing. And we don't want them pulling one of these granite stoppers out, looking behind it and seeing a book, reaching for it and finding it turns into dust. So would it have to be the book printed on a kind of a metal foil through embossing or through some kind of etching process that discolors the metal so that what you have is essentially a book that's got metal foil pages? And if that's the case, the print would have to be pretty small if it was something like the Complete Works of Shakespeare. And I think I would like to put a copy of the Complete Works of Shakespeare in some form that would not disintegrate over a million, 2 million, 3 million years. Let's be optimistic and assume that we can put three books. I mean, the choice is open, obviously. This is a completely hypothetical exercise. The choice is open. You could put, if you could put three books per container, per 1 cubic foot sealed compartment, then you could send 36 books out, assuming they're printed on a form that won't disintegrate. But I think I would put the Complete Works of Shakespeare, Gray's Anatomy, and I mean the book Gray's Anatomy, not the, I think there's a television series or something in it. The Complete Works of Mark Twain in a volume. And I would place a copy of Hosting the Casimir by C.E. Sales right in there next to the Mark Twain. If you don't know what that is, shame on you. This is installment 12. But of course, if you're a new listener, you wouldn't know. In order to get to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space online, the easiest way is to go to www.anim5.com. That's A-N-I-M, first four letters in the word animation, and the number 5, Anim 5. You will see a little yellow dummy, and if you click on him, it'll take you to the IDDFOS webpage, but next to the little yellow dummy, you'll see a dragon. Deceptive, I imagine, because if I was looking for international detective dragons, I'd probably click the dragon. But it's not a bad move, because there you see available a very fine novel called Hosting the Casimir. And so I would put a copy of that in as well. I've got another compartment. I can put another three books. Let's see, the Koran, the Bible, the Talmud, if that's allowed. The best compilation of Buddhist teachings in a volume. The best compilation of Native American teachings in a volume. And I guess all the Hindu teachings. That's six books, I think. That takes care of one whole side of the thing. Would there really be any point to doing that? I mean, really, if there's 2 million years, 2 or 3 million years have gone by and they've popped this thing open, could we really assume that no matter how far advanced they are, that there'd be any possible way, any way at all for them to decipher any of that? Or would it just be something, for me, would it just be something that made me feel better knowing that those 9 books still existed? And what about all the rest? I mean, obviously, based on my choice, I'm coming at this from a completely Western point of view. You know, the complete works of William Shakespeare and Mark Twain and Grey's Anatomy wouldn't necessarily be the first choice of somebody from West Africa, or Northern Russia, or Greenland, or even the guy in the car next to me. But I think that's what I'd do. Those 9 books, printed and assembled in such a manner so that their pages would not crumble. They'd be on some kind of material that would not disintegrate in the absolute zero of space over millions of years. And let's hear another couple of podcast promos, and because I'm at my first destination. And when I come back, I'll start thinking about the second side, the second edge. I haven't even begun to think about what to write on the surface. But here's a couple of podcast promos. Because I like them, because they're good, and I hope you will too. Back in a bit. All right, so I pretty much packed 3 compartments of one side of this granite block with books. Let's start on the first compartment of side, the second edge. I should say edge, I shouldn't say side. First compartment on the second edge, I would put something like an Edison wax cylinder, only of course it wouldn't be wax. It would probably be titanium or something, with a recorded voice. The equivalent of an Edison wax cylinder, only recorded in titanium, with a horn and needle, probably a needle that was molded as part of the horn. Basically, a device which, if turned with the needle against the cylinder, would produce what was recorded on the cylinder. How would they know to operate this thing? Because I would put a little metal flip book, the equivalent of a flip book, where you just let the pages flip through your thumb, in their case their tentacle, showing pictorially the operation of the mechanism. The cylinder turns, the needle is placed against the cylinder, sound comes out, which of course won't appear in the pictures. No written instructions, no secret binary code, a flip book. What would it say on the cylinder? Beginning of the cylinder would be, hello, 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 just like in the Three Stooges. Once that was done, Maybe a short piece of, a Vivaldi flute concerto. Short piece of Mozart's clarinet concerto, some ragtime. As many different forms of music as I could fit as possible on this cylinder. If it can fit in a 1 foot square. That was the first compartment. Second compartment, I'm going to exercise my privilege as the individual making up this fantasy, this hypothetical launch into space, that if I can put anything in that second compartment, it would be the dehydrated and powdered hearts of everyone that cut me off in traffic this year. Starting with the bile bag that just honked his horn at me because I didn't turn right on red fast enough to suit his mood. All right, so somewhere in that compartment, let's just say there's a jar that's got the powdered hearts of those people that don't deserve to live out the rest of their lives. You know, I'm allowed to be bitter. And I'm allowed to get pissed off. And so I am, and this is the result. Now, back to the hypothetical question. I would place a human brain in the second compartment. A human brain encased in glass or lucite, whatever that material is that they pour around scorpions and tarantulas, and then sell in the souvenir shops. I think it's lucite. I could be wrong, it might be glass. But, yeah, a human brain. And glass might melt under extremely hot conditions, but the fact of the matter is, the conditions where this thing is going, this great granite slab, are not going to be hot. They're going to be absolute zero. They're going to be colder than it is within your imagination to conceive of. So, a human brain that might give some idea, well, they'd certainly know what it was from having Grey's Anatomy in the other compartment to reference. And if it was, since it's a genuine human brain, if they have genetic technology to the extent that they can clone, then they'd actually maybe even be able to make a human or several. Which probably leads to, the third compartment of the second edge. I think we're up to six compartments now. In that sixth compartment, again encased in either glass or lucite, Noah's Ark situation. Sample DNA of every possible creature on Earth. Everything from hermit crabs to mountain lions. Whatever we can get, whatever can be placed in it within a 1 foot square. They, of course, would have to be absolutely microscopic samples. So knowing that the planet Earth and the Sun are not going to last forever, that there will be an end to them, but also knowing that the galaxy will continue because new suns are forming all the time, and assuming that intelligence of some kind will arise in some fashion, and hoping against hope that the block will be discovered by one of them, sending just those six compartmentfuls of things, particularly the DNA, could give you the hope that all of these creatures could possibly exist again somewhere else. Possibly even Homo sapiens. This is also assuming, of course, that humanity itself doesn't survive and doesn't expand out into other survivable places. Well, I've got six more compartments, but I'm at my second location. That means it's time for one podcast promo. Back in a bit. I think I forgot the point that I reached. Just left my second location. and I forgot where I left off. I think I got two edges done, six compartments, so I've got six more to go if I want to use them. And of course I do. All right then, two of the compartments to be filled with photographs. As many 1 foot square images, again, produced in a form that, produced in a physical form that won't rot for a million years. If that means some kind of color etching on metal, I mean, we have to have the technology. We can't be in a situation where we're making nanotubes and plastic solar cells, solar panels, and not be able to make full color images that aren't based on emulsion on paper or print. I'm not saying this is cheap. I mean, obviously the most expensive part of the whole business would be getting the granite up into space and out of the solar system. We're talking about the cheap part now. Practically a solid 1 foot thick by 1 foot layer of images consisting of photographs of major Earth cities, people going about their daily business, at the store, on the street, in their cars, with their families, and reproductions of the most famous and revered works of art from museums around the world. So that, in fact, while Linda Sagan can claim to be currently the only artist whose work will survive the death of the sun, in our scenario, in my scenario, sealed inside these first two blocks of the third edge, would be the world's major works of art. One of those images, I think, should be, and if they haven't figured out for themselves just by finding the thing, then this would certainly convince them that humanity had reached a spacefaring level, would be a photograph of the planet Earth. One of those famous, gorgeous, full-blown, full-color, wow, look at all the swirly clouds pictures of the Earth. Now I realize that's really kind of open-ended, because it doesn't really force me to choose, okay, which works of art, which photographs. You only have so many you can fit stacked 1 foot across. Well, I'm going to capitalize in this case on my own ignorance, in that I have no idea how thick a metallic full-color image would end up being. Could it be as thin as a sheet of tinfoil? Well, if we can make it full color and be metal, why not? And if that's the case, then I could fit thousands inside those compartments. So I'm going to plead ignorance and assume I can fit 2,000 images. Third compartment of the third edge. I keep going back to books, and I keep thinking dictionaries of the world's most spoken languages, but again, it would be a pointless exercise. There'd be no baseline for anyone to translate from. Third compartment of the third edge, whatever DNA wouldn't fit in that other compartment. Plant life, insect life, benevolent bacteria. Yeah, it would seem to me it would take more than a square foot to fit all that DNA in the form of samples that could be preserved, whether poured into glass or encased in lucite. Even if each were the size of a grain of rice, it could probably take something like 30 years just to gather it all. Yeah, the first DNA sample block would be animal life, and that second block would be plant life and bacteria. Now I've got a fourth edge to play with. I've only got three more compartments. I would put the metallic, long-lasting version of ViewMaster slides. 3D ViewMaster slides, where the slides, of course, would operate the same way the turn-of-the-century ones did. They weren't transparent. You had to have a light shining on them. But of course, there were views. There were 3D views done. Oh, I think they started doing that very shortly after photography was invented. Another one of those dates I'd have to check. But you didn't need transparencies in order to do it. And so, of course, we would have our metallic equivalent of the offset view, so that when viewed through the device I'd put in that compartment, they would offer 3D views. Views of what? Views of the most beautiful landscapes we can possibly find left on the planet. Grand Canyon, Angel Falls, Niagara Falls, the Congo, the Amazon rainforests, Hawaii, just oceanscapes, sunsets, basically everything natural about planet Earth that inspires appreciation just for having seen it. As many of those slides and the device to view them with in that, that would be number 10, compartment 10. Okay, I think I'm on number 11. Compartment number 11. I would guess a sample of pieces of technology that can't be produced unless you've reached a certain technological level. Something that would let folks know where we were at as far as what we could make when the block was sent out. So, fiber optics, some samples of fiber optics, the latest microprocessors, some samples of composite plastics, some samples of nanotube filaments, fibers, sheets, some holograms, I suppose, the kind that you don't have to shine a laser on, maybe a real diamond and a cubic zirconium. I would also try somehow to get isolated so that it, in that same compartment, so that it could be seen to be an important enough thing to look at closely. Some sculptures. Around about the year 2000, I saw an article online about a Japanese scientist who was working in nanotechnology who had managed, with a laser and a special form of microplastic, to carve a sculpture of a bull, and it was a good sculpture. It was clearly recognizable as a bull. Well done, well proportioned, nice piece of work. You know, it didn't look like a crude clay thing thrown together by some kid. It looked like a good sculpture of a bull. You can look this up online if you can find it. I found the image recently looking for it. Well, the thing that made it impressive to me anyway, and this is 6 years ago, the thing that made it impressive to me was the fact that it was the size of a red blood cell. So something like that, and include along with it whatever other samples of nanotechnology we have, and maybe a chemistry book, because if anything could be figured out by inference, by reference, you know, atomic bondings, atomic weight, and chemical reactions, the laws of physics, we'll assume, remain the same throughout the galaxy and over extended periods of time. We could be wrong about that too. But if that's true, then just by looking at the shapes of the diagrams in a chemistry book, they would see the same relationships that they would have discovered themselves if they produced any kind of a two-dimensional record, and one would assume that they would. And the final compartment, I would put an Etch-a-Sketch, a Slinky, a Rubber Duck, a Top, a Yo-Yo, a Rabbit's Foot, one kind of each coin, well, a penny, a nickel, a dime, and a quarter, maybe a 50-cent piece, a whistle, a jump rope, and any other classic toy that would fit in that final compartment. Let them figure it out. Now, as far as what I would put on a 10-foot by 10-foot surface, on one side, this is going to sound like a cop-out, but on one side I would put the most durable high-reflective mirror surface that could be devised. Essentially, the longest lasting mirror we can make. And that mainly because I would expect the thing to be sent into some kind of a tumble so that it would reflect light well and not just disappear entirely in the blackness, in the background blackness of space. On the other side, the top portion, I would display the continents of the Earth, something like that pictogram that Linda Sagan drew or had drawn or got together. It doesn't actually say specifically how she produced it, aside from the fact that they did a computer composite of what the average human looks like. That type of pictogram showing where the major cities are, essentially a 5-foot by 10-foot layout, global flattened map of the Earth, with that sketch of humans being placed at the points where the major cities were, so that if the Earth actually did still exist, and we managed to wipe ourselves out completely, they would know where to dig. And they could certainly find the solar system just by checking the trajectory of the thing. And in the bottom portion, I would carve in atomic symbols, symbols showing hydrogen, gold, calcium, iron, atomic diagrams showing that there are positive and negative particles, that we knew about electrons and orbitals, and we understood the atomic weights of things. Maybe a mushroom cloud, indicating that we may or may not have done ourselves in.
Well, I've reviewed what I've got so far, and man, do I mess up right and left. I just, I'd listened to it a lot earlier, and it bugged me right from the start that I was calling the Pioneer spacecraft satellites. I don't know why I insisted on calling them repeatedly satellites. They're spacecraft, they're exploratory spacecraft, they're robotic exploration vehicles. So sorry about that. I think I also miscounted on the books. I may have even miscounted on the number of compartments I filled. Well, it's neither here nor there. Just wanted to get the ideas across. And I reiterate, the question for this podcast, not, as I said earlier, the podcast for this question, but the question for this podcast is, what would you carve on the face of that granite block, and what would you put in the compartments? I think I'm going to take back what I said just a little bit earlier here. Modify. Modify a bit. I would do the continental layout of the surface of the Earth. I would put the symbols, the man and woman drawing, in the places where the major cities are. And in the lower half, I'd include some dots, probably. Just a series in a linear string or in a column. Yeah, in a column. 1 dot, 2 dots, 3 dots, 4 dots, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then over next to it in a separate box, something like 2 dots and then the plus symbol, 5 dots and then the equal symbol, and then 7 dots, so that the concept of plus and equal would be gotten across. Then I would put some carved diagrams of representations of atoms, protons, neutrons, and electrons, of widely known elements, hydrogen, silicon, maybe oxygen, just so that that idea has gotten across, that that's what those symbols mean. And I wouldn't put a mushroom cloud on the sucker. I would put in the bottom right-hand section an atomic diagram representing all the protons, neutrons, and electrons present in a gold atom. Gold. Then I would put the equal sign, and then I would carve the most accurate granite representation of a human skull. Gold equals death. In other words, if we're not around anymore, I'd like something to indicate one of the major reasons that we're not. What killed us. At least one of the major things that killed us. So what's your answer? What would you carve? What would you put in the compartments? Oh, yes, one more diagram. Sorry. A diagram of the block itself showing the little plug blocks that cover up the holes and protective compartments removed. An exploded diagram. An isometric view, 3/4. Just so that there's no mistaking. Maybe even a tinier detailed carving on that drawing, vaguely of what it looks like on the face. Kind of like a picture of a book on the cover of itself. I don't know if that made any sense. Please send your speculations on this, your responses, your ideas, to anim5@anim5.com. And of course, that goes for any of the other podcasts you may have downloaded and listened to. There is no time limit on when to respond to them. There certainly isn't now. I've had one listener feedback, many thanks to Digger Story, but obviously I could use a whole lot more. And now we're going to wrap it up. We'll have a piece of music. On the other side of the piece of music, I will say my goodbyes, and I hope you enjoy this. Thank you. And so, we reach the end of installment 12, transmission 12, audio offering 12, episode 12. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you indeed. I hope you enjoyed it. I don't know what the topic's going to be for episode 13, but I will, of course, in that episode be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes well for you, and best of days.